Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today. That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Hello and welcome to The Price of Football, the show that looks at the money behind the beautiful game with me, Kevin Day, and Liverpool University's Kieran Maguire. How are you, Kieran?
I'm good. I'm looking forward to seeing some football for once. It's been ages. So that's to look forward to. And I just want to go out. I just want to say on record. I mentioned my lad on Sunday's show, and I've had some contact from some of our listeners, and I was in tears at times. The kindness and the support that's been offered has really. It's really taken me to the heart. So you know who you are, and I'd just like to say from me a huge thank you, and on behalf of Alex, a big thank you as well. And we hope to be in touch.
You'll start me off now, as you know. I came back from my mother-in-law's funeral in Birmingham today, so I'm a bit edgy myself. Can you see? Not as edgy as Ali was when we were on the way to the cemetery behind the coffin. Six of us in the family hearse or car, or whatever they call it, and it turns out the driver was a West Brom fan, and asked if this was the right time to have a chat about their finances. Which,
oh no,
Ed and I didn't see any problem with that, but apparently Ali wasn't best pleased. She said, "If this conversation hasn't stopped by the time we pull up at the church door, there is going to be problems all round." Like, oh, I'm just trying to lighten the mood, darling. Not by talking about football finance. It's news day, Kieran.
Yes.
And we have good news for some of you. Those of you who went early on Tracy Crouch in the Price of Football bingo are onto a winner. But unfortunately, it seems rumours abound that she herself could be onto a loser, Kieran.
Yes, this is a complex and ever-changing story. Clearly, we have a new Prime Minister, and the new Prime Minister has a special advisor, a guy called Jason Steen. Now, some of you might say, well, what does Jason do? He's supposed to be a PR guru. His previous job was he was the advisor to Prince Andrew. and by all accounts, he was the person who suggested that Prince Andrew goes for that Emily Maitlis interview. So that was, I think the jury's out as to whether Prince Andrew came across as a complete success on that.
To be fair, PR for Prince Andrew is quite a tricky job.
Yes,
at the best of times, it's quite a tricky job. But yeah, I'm sure he's nice and relaxed now. He's gone from the Prince Andrew frying pan into the Liz Truss fire.
Yes, I think it's fair to say he is a free marketeer. He briefed some journalists. The nature of politics is that things are leaked and unleaked and re-leaked and so on. So he briefed some people, and the story was fan-led review, dead in the water. You know, the new government believes in small government. It believes in the free market. It believes in self-regulation. And when that was released, I think it's fair to say that, I've not spoken to anybody at DCMS, and I've not been in contact with Tracy Crouch, but I think it's fair to say that they were pretty upset. So that went down badly. But when the articles were published, there was a bit of a backlash. I think there were some people using social media to say, this seems a bit harsh. I can't remember who those people are. And then sort of there was a fight back. Certainly some MPs who are Conservative MPs in marginal seats realised that, I think, on top of the budget, which again, a mixed response is the politest way I can describe it. You've got those well-known lefty people, such as the Bank of England and the IMF, saying we don't think this is a good idea. Of course, they get accused of being bloody communists, but that's not gone down well. Some MPs in marginal seats, you know, this so-called red wall, have realised, well, if we are seen to be anti-football, by in the sense of if the fan-led review gets completely shelved, then the Premier League has won. And, you know, the Premier League has not helped itself, in my opinion. My understanding is the FA themselves would like to be the independent regulator, which is not perfect, but it's not imperfect. And also that the FA was going to suggest that if the Premier League and the EFL could not reach some form of agreement, then the Premier League would be sort of the final arbiter as to what was a fair deal. And the Premier League, because they were confident that Jason Steen was going to give the kibosh to the fan-led review, effectively turned around, gave two fingers to the FA and said, no, we're happy to sit on this. We'll wait. The EFL have got no idea what's going on because nothing's been given to them. So, the Premier League have also been, there's another body called the Institute of Economic Affairs, and they appear to be sort of the attack dog, sort of parroting the approach of the Premier League, you know, deny, delay, discredit the fan-led review. They just look up Institute of Economic Affairs, Ofcom, and James O'Brien. It's an interesting organisation, a registered charity. Not quite sure where its funding comes from. It's all out there in the public domain, so we're not saying anything too rude in case producer guy's having palpitations. So we now appear to have a new sports minister, a guy called Stuart Andrew. I think it's fair to say he's not a football fan, but he's not anti-football. But, you know, I think as a sports minister, somebody who is effectively going to be keen on football, is our national sport. So there have been meetings between Stuart Andrew and some of the people in favour of the fan-led review. And my understanding, cards on the table, I talk to journalists, I talk to people, or rather I don't talk to them, I listen to them, that there's been a U-turn on the U-turn. So initially, I think a lot of people put a hell of a lot of work into the fan-led review, into the proposals, into the government's initial response. And then for one person to effectively say, unelected person, say, I'm not keen on it, it ain't going to take place. It looks like Stuart Andrew is a bit more amenable than where he was before he was appointed. And I'm hoping that we will see a white paper in autumn. Now, the definition of autumn is fairly loose. From the latest noises I'm getting, and I'm not trying to big myself up here, I just listen to people, I just, you know, listen to other conversations in effect. The latest that the government is certainly softening its opposition to the proposals, and we could see something. Clearly, the Labour Party had Gary Neville talk at their conference this week. The Labour Party are all in as far as the fan-led review is concerned. Mm. So they have said it, they will implement it. I'm not saying that's going to be a vote winner or a vote changer. It's not for me to say so. But you know, we have the Her Majesty's opposition clearly will be supporting the white paper or even trying to boost it, for all we know. So that's where we are. So yeah, I've got to be honest. I was pretty depressed at the weekend, but I'm feeling far more positive now.
Well, I'm pleased to hear that, Kieran. I don't like the idea of you being low. The PM's advisor, Jason Steen, also dropped very heavy hints that the new government, or the new iteration of this government, have no interest whatsoever in restricting gambling sponsorship in sport, which again is a change of direction from Boris Johnson. Boris Johnson, whether he was a sports fan or not, seemed to understand that there were votes in sport, and certainly, you know, he tossed a coin and decided he was against Super League, and was very vocal in his support for the Tracy Crouch fan-led review, and also initial indications were that he was very keen to see, if not government forcing it, at least having a word with the Premier League to rein in shirt sponsorship from gambling companies, which led us to speculate that probably in the next 3 years or so that would end. But it seems now that this government have no interest in doing that. So that's something else to keep an eye on, Kieran. We love a kit story on The Price of Football, as you all know. We love it when kits are in the news, but the one that broke today from Hummel is an amazing story, which I fear may well lead to big financial penalties for them from FIFA down the line.
Well, I think we have to wait to see on this. Hummel, as you know, we both associate Hummel with Denmark.
Yeah, of course.
Because it's, you know, those really iconic kits, the Hummel logo, which has always been an integral part of a Danish kit. So Hummel today, they brought out a press release and they say, first of all, they've got a contract. Mm. Yeah, they contracts have to be honoured. So that's understandable. And whilst before I forget, if there's ever a man that knows about a contract or two, it's our friend Nick DeMarco, and we're absolutely delighted to say that Nick is coming on the show next week, and he's going to answer questions from listeners. So if you've got a question for Nick, if you want to send them in to questions@priceoffootball.com, and if you put the heading "Ask Nick," we will ask him to answer some of them, as well as have a bit of a chat himself with a good man. He's now King's Counsel, of course, following the death of Her Majesty. Hummel have
I'm just going to interrupt him for some of our listeners who may not be aware who Nick is. Nick is basically the legal equivalent of Kieran. Basically, he's just written a book which will probably become the Bible of the law in football. And he is the man who knows more about how the law relates to football and contractual issues and all sorts of stuff. So any questions you have that are around any legal aspect of football, whether it be transfers or even the story we're about to discuss now, as Kieran said, Price of Football, questions@priceoffootball.com, brackets or inverted commas, ask Nick. I'm sure there'll be many of them. Sorry, Kieran.
Yeah, cool. No, you're absolutely right. So Hummel have said we support the national team. They are proud Danes, and you know, that's fantastic. Denmark's a wonderful country. We support the national team, but we shouldn't confuse our support for the tournament, which has cost thousands of lives. So that's a pretty, you know, it's a pretty strong statement. And what they've decided to do, and that they have released the World Cup kit for Denmark, but the one thing which is noticeable about it is that it's monochrome. So normally you'd have a red shirt with the white chevrons and the white Hummel badge and the white Danish badge, and all of that is now just pure red. So you can't distinguish it. That's exactly the same for the second kit, which is all white. And then they've said the colour of mourning is black. Mm-hmm. So the Danish third kit for this tournament in Qatar to represent mourning is going to be an all-black kit, again, with no logos, no chevrons. That will be visible. They'll be sort of embedded into, sort of moulded into the design, but you won't be able to physically see them. And some people say, well, they're not doing enough, but they're doing more than nothing. And for that, I think it's fair to say they deserve some credit.
I think they do, Kieran, but I can't see how FIFA can't respond to it. I mean, for a start off, they refer to the colour as blood red. And basically what their press release goes on to say is that they want their brand to have no visibility whatsoever in Qatar, a World Cup they say should not be taking place there, where thousands of people have died and where thousands of people are unable to live freely because of their sexuality, religion or political beliefs. And you know what FIFA's record in the past has been like here. I mean, this is, as far as I will be concerned, much as we agree with what Hummel are doing, and it's a wonderful gesture, I mean, it really is tarnishing the brand of the World Cup around the country. I mean, every time Denmark games are shown on TV, there will be people asking why the kits are like that. And we know from experience that FIFA don't take kindly to that sort of thing, do they?
I agree with you that FIFA won't be happy, but a football kit design is between two parties. It's between the manufacturer and the football association. So if the Danish Football Association have signed off on this blood red kit, then they are entitled to wear it. You know, I can't see on what contractual grounds, and we are pub lawyers. We're the first to appear this. I can't see on what contractual grounds FIFA can oppose. You know, if an individual country chooses to, an individual company chooses to voice an opinion, that they're entitled to do that. I know that that Harry Kane is going to be wearing an armband, which is all about inclusivity. And again, it's small steps, but if it sparks one conversation, which leads to one person having a greater bit of understanding, then that's better than no conversations.
I quite agree. I do agree. This is a question I think we will put to Nick DeMarco next week. But also, the vindictiveness of FIFA does lead me to believe that if they can't punish them financially, they will be getting some really bad VAR decisions, Denmark. And they will be bottom of that group somehow and on the plane on the way home as quickly as possible. Some big news, Kieran, back at home. Big news this week for Oxford fans.
Yes. The current owners, or should I say the previous owner of Oxford United, Sumreath Thanakarn Janasuth, and I'm only going to say that once, and apologies if I've said that incorrectly, known as Tiger to his mates, by all accounts, he has sold a majority stake in Oxford United. So the club does have new owners. The new owners are Eric Fahia, who is Indonesian. He's an Indonesian minister. He is the former owner of Inter Milan. He's the former owner of DC United in the MLS. He's also involved in the NBA with the Philadelphia 76ers. So he's got experience of sport. There's also somebody called Anindya Bakri. So between them, they got 51%. And 51% is always important because ultimately, with 51 votes out of 100, you can get your views across. You can effectively dictate how a company is organised. So, I'm sure Oxford United's fans, their first question will be how much money they're going to put into the transfer budget. But I don't expect there to be, I don't expect Kylian Mbappe to be seen popping down to the local branch of Greggs just to check it out in Oxford with a view to a transfer. I think there will be, perhaps the budget might be a wee bit higher. They're also bringing in a new chief executive, a guy called Tim Williams, who, again, very experienced, Inter Milan, Manchester United. He's got to pass the owners and directors test, but I cannot see that being an issue. He should sail past that with flying colours. So a change, for a club which that doesn't get a lot of publicity, but you and I are both old enough to remember when when Oxford got to Wembley, John Aldridge, Dean Saunders, they were a pretty decent side for a while. So it's whenever there's a change at the top, there's always excitement, and I think Oxford fans will be intrigued. At the same time, they've had a few false dawns before, so I suspect some of them will be circumspect, but they'll be living in hope rather than expectation, which is how all football should be.
Yeah, I have to say, Kieran, that given the house prices in Oxford, I think even Kylian Mbappe might struggle to buy one outright. Do we know how much these two gentlemen paid to acquire 51% of Oxford?
I've not seen any figures quoted. It does appear to have been a private deal. I would imagine the club will be going for around about 10 to 12 million, but I could be talking out my bottom.
Because they are a club, Oxford. I mean, like you say, that those of our generation, I mean, their previous ground was awful. The new ground looks great, but they are a club a bit like Plymouth. You don't have to take too much of a stretch of the imagination to see them flourishing in the Championship and maybe even a season or two in the Premier League. There's a big catchment area there. There's a lot of money in most of the area. There are pockets of economic deprivation in Oxford, but also you've got a huge captive market of students just down the road as well who would be happy to go and see successful teams. So that's one to keep an eye on. We discussed last week, Kieran, following the mini budget, the benefits that some of the more wealthy players would get. And as we stressed, they didn't try to engineer them. They didn't agitate for them, but they've benefited from them. But there's a story, Kieran, about the pay of people at Premier League clubs at the other end of the scale this week.
Yes. This is a report which has effectively come out. This is all in respect of the real living wage. So the government sets a minimum wage, and then we have something called the real living wage foundation, to which some clubs have signed up in terms of their commitment. So those clubs are Chelsea, Everton, Liverpool, Brighton, West Ham and Palace. So high fives to all around. I believe that Newcastle are planning to join and sign up for this, and certainly the new owners at Newcastle. And again, I'm not making any comments positive or negative here. I'm just trying to be honest. As far as the staff are concerned, the new owners seem to be willing to put more money into people who are at the bottom end. And I would applaud that. Anybody that helps to lift the wages for those at the bottom end is got to be positive. The people who have done this investigation, they've said, whilst they're not members of the foundation, Manchester City, Brentford, Fulham, Leicester and Wolves are paying all staff the real living wage. Again, hats off to them. Next, and I'm a little bit peeved at this because I was contacted by Manchester United last year and I gave them a lot of credit at the time. Manchester United, Southampton and Arsenal are committing to the real living wage, but for some reason, not for caterers, cleaners or stewards, which I find A, strange and B, disappointing. If Manchester United can afford to pay the shareholders £33 million in dividends last year when they made record losses, it does seem very harsh that they can't pay their staff £10.90 an hour.
Would their argument be that these are external staff employed through an agency then?
Yes, I think it would be in relation to some contractors, but Spurs have said, again, all of our staff, we do pay the real living wage. When it comes to contractors, and this is management speak, a key part of selection is whether or not our contractors pay the real living wage. Well, don't make it a key part of selection. Make it mandatory. We don't give contracts to people unless they commit to the real living wage themselves. That'd be quite simple. So and there's a couple of other clubs that are being not particularly responsive. So the majority of clubs, the vast majority of clubs, are giving the real living wage to all or a significant number of their employees. But it does seem difficult in the present climate to say why can't we do this? This is the Premier League. It is a very successful institution in its own right. It's also different in the EFL. Yeah, but the wealthy have very little excuse for not committing to this, in my view.
What's the difference, Kieran, between the legal living wage and the real living wage? You mentioned £10.90 there as the real living wage an hour.
Yeah.
Still doesn't strike me as a lot of money, but what's the legal living wage that has to be paid?
Well, the minimum wage, I think it's around about £9.50. I've not checked the details. So, you know, you're getting an extra, you know, 10-15% if you are on the real living wage. And as you rightly say, you know, that doesn't go far when we have fuel inflation, energy inflation, food inflation, and so on. But you know, it has. I know that's increased over the course of the past year, as far as the real living wage is concerned, and it does offer a safety net for those people, because many of these jobs are pretty unpleasant. You know, I've seen the abuse given to people working behind the counters at football grounds from, you know, blokes who are not happy that it's taken an extra 30 seconds to deliver a couple of pints. Stewards have to put up with a load of old crap. You know, clubs should acknowledge sort of the quite, you know, tardy way that they are treated by some fans. You know, the vast majority, I think, as we know, are fine. And that should be reflected in how these people are being paid.
Well, of course it should, because it's not their fault for a start. If any delays are caused by people like you, Kieran, asking for coffee and Haribo, it's just it should be illegal to sell anything other than beer, except for when they in the family area when there's kids. But also, I mean, that difference between the two, whether you're talking about £1 or £1.50 or £2. That's not enough that a Premier League football club can't afford to pay 1,000 people on match day that extra money, or the 355 to 500 staff that they've got that extra money. It's not going to break them. So they should be paying it. Their own common sense, PR-wise, should tell them they should be paying this at this moment. And I'm pleased that both our clubs are firmly on that list of people that do pay properly. Big news this week in Scotland, Kieran, and good news as well.
Well, yes, I think it's good news, but I don't think it's universally gone down well. So the SPFL have extended their broadcast deal with Sky. It's £150 million over 5 years. It means that they're going to broadcast more matches than they do at present. I think it's going to be between 48 to 60. They're also going to allow pay-per-view for up to five home games, which I think will be interesting. So it's more money than the previous deal. The critics of the deal say, well, it's less money than the Scandinavian countries are getting. And that is absolutely true. And now we come to sort of, you know, an argument between and about numbers. In Scandinavia, every single game is broadcast, so you do have that range of choice, and it works out as around about £100,000 a match. If we take a look at the Scottish deal, that the SPFL have restricted the number of matches which are being broadcast, so therefore they're making around about £500,000 per match. And the argument that's being put forwards is that as a result of that, as there is an element of scarcity, attendances in Scotland are not unusually high, but they are high on a relative basis. On a, you know, the number of people that attend matches per 100 of population is higher in Scotland than practically everywhere else in Europe.
Yeah.
And the SPFL say, well, that's partly due to the fact that we do introduce some scarcity into the market. They're also Sky are also going to broadcast some women's matches. Women's football in Scotland is starting to develop more and more. So it means that they're getting more money per match than in Scandinavia. If we then move on to the Premier League, again, the Premier League doesn't show every match. It shows, you know, it's 200 out of 380are chosen. There's a scarcity factor there. The Premier League probably generates between £7 and £9 million per match, depending upon the package that the broadcasters have signed up to. So, yeah, it's far more lucrative than Scotland. But England's a bigger country, and the Premier League is a more popular product than Scottish football. And that's not a criticism of Scottish football. It's reflected in eyeballs. So it is a deal which I think has the backing of the vast majority of clubs. I believe Rangers are, however, unhappy about it. But under, I think, the rules, that if you have an 11-1 vote from the Premiership, then things can be signed off. So I don't think we've finished with regards to this particular deal yet, because the nature of Scottish football is things are never over. But it does give clubs something to look forward to in terms of, well, this is what we can expect a budget for from, I think it's from 2024 onwards. Yeah, 2024 is still a long time away.
Those extra pay-per-view games, Kieran, that will be available, will they be across the entire league, or will they be simply mopping up the very few games that aren't Rangers or Celtic that are shown live on Scottish TV already?
Well, trying to work out how this works is a little bit difficult. I think if it's individual clubs who can broadcast individual home matches and each of them can do five, it's not dissimilar to what we have as far as the EFL are concerned and I follow. So it would certainly benefit the larger clubs to a greater extent than it would the smaller. And that's a separate discussion, because we know one of the outstanding issues as far as some of the dissenting clubs in the EFL are concerned is that it just increases the gaps between rich and poor, and in doing so decreases competitiveness. So the small print, as always, will be something worth getting your teeth into, but that's another contract I'll have to take a look at.
Yeah, as ever, Keir, I'm going to delegate the small print getting into to you, if that's okay. I know we normally have these conversations off air, but just this one, I'll just I've got a glass of wine waiting, so we'll just let's just take that as read. You'll do the small print on that one. This episode of The Price of Football is brought to you by the AI-powered workspace Notion. We are living in an era of information overload, and we have more knowledge than ever before. But what do we do with it all? If you're in Notion, you put that knowledge to work.
It's a workspace designed not just for making progress, but getting inspired. And all I can say on a personal level, as for somebody whose life is quite chaotic, and I'm writing pieces for government and newspapers and media content, I've got my university commitments and I'm supposed to be writing a book, I use Notion all the time because it brings order into chaos.
Well, if you need order brought to your chaos, you can try Notion for free when you go to notion.com/priceoffootball. That's all lowercase letters, notion.com/priceoffootball, and start turning your ideas into action. That's notion.com/priceoffootball.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Steve Lamack, and every week I'm joined by Music Allies Head of Insight, Stuart Dredge, on The Price of Music, the weekly podcast all about the money behind the music industry. In each episode, we discuss the very latest goings-on in the music business and dig into the finances behind the big stories.
So whether you're a music lover who just wants to know more about what really goes on in the industry, or you're an aspiring musician, manager or label owner who wants some inside knowledge on how Spotify's financial model really works, or what the future holds for independent live music venues, this is a show for you.
Subscribe to The Price of Music in your podcast app now. See you soon.
Kieran have been focusing quite forensically on the two big teams in Spain recently and their financial problems. But it turns out it's not just Spain. One of the biggest clubs in Italy have reported huge financial losses.
Yes, this is Juventus, who have announced 254 million euros worth of losses. So we commented last week about Manchester United losing 150 million pounds in a year, and that was the third biggest in the history of the Premier League. Well, Juventus have just had a hold my beer moment, and this far exceeds any losses ever incurred by Premier League clubs. And if you think, you know, what you people say, oh, well, what about Chelsea in the first year of Abramovich, or Manchester City in the early years of Mansour, because there was no financial fair play to have to worry about in those times? Well, Juventus have just knocked that one into a cocked hat. So they've lost over half a billion euro over the course of the last 3 years. There are some mitigating factors, some of which you can be sympathetic for, some less so. As far as Italian football is concerned, I think this is something which perhaps we have lost touch with. You know, last season, we just turned up to matches and COVID had been forgotten about.
Yeah.
As far as attending football was concerned. Yeah. How many people did you see at Selhurst who were wearing masks, for example, in the concourses?
For proper COVID reasons, very few.
but when it came to Italy, the government only allowed 50% attendance for a substantial amount of the season. It wasn't until March that clubs were allowed to be open to full attendances. Juventus were knocked out in the last 16 of the Champions League, so that cost them, they would be considered to be A, a lot of prize money, and B, home match attendances. And this is perhaps why Juventus are one of those teams who are still very, very keen on the Super League, because they want money without winning football matches, which is what Super League brought to them. The shareholders have put their hands in the pockets to underwrite those losses and also to pay down debt. And so they've still got 70 million euro in the bank at the start of this season, which gives them some comfort. And then I was reading the small print of Juventus's accounts, and they said that they've sold 20,000 season tickets for this season. And I was thinking, this is Juventus. You know, surely they'd be doing far more than that. But they said that the reason why they've done this and this may appeal to John Lydon, because they want to sell money. They want to sell the tickets to tourists, and of course, as we know, tourists mean money.
Yeah.
So, that is a way forward. If you have a season ticket, I think my season ticket costs me on average 27 quid per match, and that includes my travel to the game and back. So it works out at a reasonable price. Individual match tickets, you could be paying 30, 40, 50, 60 quid. And Juventus feel that by going on, targeting the individual match sale, the tourist market, the walk-up, well, not necessarily walk-up market, but the more casual fan, that's more lucrative. And they've deliberately gone down this route of not selling many season tickets, which intuitively seems counterproductive for a company which has just lost 250 million. You think they'd want every euro they could get their hands on.
Well, it's also risky, Kieran, in a different way, because as we know, any of us who have been to games there, it's not difficult to piss off an Italian football fan. Anyone who's ever sat down in a bar or cafe in Italy that's got a picture of an Italian player on the wall, and inevitably you end up talking about football, they're quick to anger, Kieran. And so
yes.
This is really going to piss them off. But the other thing, Kieran, which is interesting, I mean, the first part of the 90s, Italian football was not only the coolest product on the continent, it was Italian clubs that were attracting the biggest players, that were paying the biggest wages, that were winning the tournaments. And now you've got Juventus, the most successful Italian club of recent history, announcing this record financial loss, which doesn't bode well for the rest of them. But what sort of impact does this have on their ability to comply with FFP then?
Well, we spoke about UEFA having a naughty step, and Juventus are on it. I think they were one of the clubs that have been fined by UEFA for non-compliance or breaching financial fair play limits. And UEFA have also said you can't use COVID as a reason forever. So I think that has been reflected in the way that Juventus have entered the transfer market this season. Yeah, that they've been focusing on bargains and Bosman deals. Paul Pogba's gone back to Turin, and I think there's a complete separate podcast on what Paul Pogba's been up to with his family. Mm. Not really to be covered by us since he's returned. So it means that they're not competitive. They've had a poor start to the season. You're talking about angry Italian fans. The coach is under a lot of pressure already. So we'll have to wait and see. But it means that they're going to struggle to be competitive because the Premier League spent £1.9 billion and Italy spent close to nothing.
Yeah, so you've put an idea in producer guy's head now. Just first thing tomorrow morning, you'll be on the phone to Justin Morehouse and Swiss Ramble saying, well, I've got this idea for a Paul Pogba podcast. I have little to no knowledge, Kieran, of how difficult it is or otherwise to piss off the fans of Mansfield Town. But we predicted that this would happen. We didn't think it would happen this quickly, and we didn't think it would happen to a club this far up the pyramid. But they've become the first to ask for a switch of kickoff time in response to the energy crisis.
Yes. So, So Mansfield are they're going to play their match at Walsall on the 15th of October, kicking off at 1 p.m. instead of 3. Now, that's going to save them, an hour and a half, perhaps 2 hours of floodlights. And I think it is very much an experiment. I have spoken to some club owners. I have spoken to some chief executives and trying to get their feedback, which I think is fair to say they are unconvinced about the merits of bringing kickoffs early. If you think about Accrington Stanley, we did our show at Accrington, and it's got an absolute, for anybody that's not been, the new clubhouse is absolutely fantastic. And if you're ever looking for an excuse to get to a ground early to sink a few pints, Accrington's is a fantastic one. The facilities there are just amazing. And getting to a match at 1 o'clock and staying for a couple of hours before kickoff is fantastic. You feel that it's an appropriate time window. If you're kicking off at 1 o'clock, are you going to get there 2 hours beforehand? The chances are you're not. So from a catering beverage sales perspective, I think clubs are going to lose out. We've then got away fans. If it's Walsall fans travelling to Mansfield, that's not too far a distance. But if it was Exeter or Carlisle or clubs sort of who've got long distances, it's not great at all. Fans make huge efforts, and we're all experts on weekend rail timetables. There aren't any trains this Saturday, as we know, but it makes things more difficult, so therefore they could have an impact upon the away attendances, and away fans tend to spend money at grounds. And I was also talking to somebody in relation to this. Say, well, hold on, it's eating into Saturday morning. Now we've got quite a few fans that will be doing morning shifts at work, and they knock off at midday, or they knock off at 1 o'clock, and they come, they either go home or they go straight to the match. They won't be able to do that with a 1 o'clock kickoff. What about kids' football? There's lots of kids' football on a Saturday morning. Again, you go along, you watch your kids play. Match finishes, normally kicks off at 10, finishes at 12. You rush home, have a shower, get cleaned out, changed, get to the match in time for a 3 o'clock kickoff, you're not going to be able to do that for a 1 o'clock kickoff. So the savings, which you'll be making in energy costs, could be significantly offset and negated by impact A on attendances and B on average spend per punter per match.
And I guess it's unlikely, Kieran, that you will see any Premier League teams asking to have early kickoffs, will they?
No. They won't be able to do that, I don't think, because it might clash with the commitments in respect of the broadcasters who have matches, kickoff times are determined. Remember, the Premier League has sold individual slots, but given the huge revenues which are generated by match day fans, I can't see Premier League clubs wanting to move to adopt this. Mm. It's not going to go down well with not just domestic broadcasters, but also overseas broadcasters.
Of course, what some Premier League clubs could do to save on the energy bills, and quite a few people have pointed this out, is not have the floodlights on at 3 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon in September. It's not a good look, lads. I'm also starting to wonder, Kieran, whether Tracy Crouch and Accrington Stanley's clubhouse have got you on a little deal where you get a fiver every time you mention each of them. You get a little fiver coming your way. Bad news for supporters of a club in Northern Ireland this week, Kieran.
Yes, we're talking about Crusaders FC. Now, Crusaders FC potentially were going to be sold to a Singapore company called Irama Sports in a £2.5 million deal. And that would have given Irama Sports a 70% stake. And it was put to shareholders, and apparently overwhelmingly, the deal was going to go through. And the deal has collapsed. Now, in the local newspaper, it says it's collapsed for tax reasons, but I couldn't read the rest of the article because it was behind a paywall. So I was like, okay, I'll just take it as read. We've spoken about Irama Sports before. So they did acquire the grounds where Whiteleaf play, your neck of the woods. Yeah. And we don't know what happened next, but Whiteleaf effectively said, well, we're not prepared to pay the new rent. And they have now been replaced by a team called AFC Whiteleaf, who are playing at that ground. There's another club called Abingdon Town who also quit their local league, I think effectively citing, we can't afford to play with Irama Sports effectively as the new landlord. So what is Irama Sports, and why is it getting involved in football, and what is its link to Ian Rush, who appears to be endorsing it but isn't a director, isn't connected? So here we enter the world of a gentleman called Parvinder Chopra, who appears to be in charge. Now, we're living in 2022. It's very unusual for somebody who is supposedly a multimillionaire, if not richer, to have zero photographs of them and zero profile of them as far as the digital world is concerned. But this does appear to be the case with Mr. Chopra. We know that he owns two yachts, which seem to be based in Malta, which seems strange for somebody from a Singapore base. We know that Irama Sports used to own the Claremont Hotel in Singapore. If you're thinking of booking the Claremont Hotel, go to TripAdvisor and look at the average mark, which I believe is 2 out of 5. And it's some of the photographs suggest that you might be sharing your hotel experience with large numbers of cockroaches. Hmm. It did look pretty grim. And I've stayed in the Adelphi in Liverpool, so it looked worse than that. And I've got my own plaque at the Adelphi for reasons I'm not prepared to discuss. So Yeah, very strange. And also, I've got to mention here two guys that have done a lot of work, James Cave and Martin Calladine. Take a look at Martin's blog called Ugly Game. In respect of Irama Sports, it does make you feel slightly uncomfortable, stroke questioning as to what's the rationale, what was the logic behind buying Crusaders Football Club. And I'm not saying there's anything untoward about it, but there should always be a positive reason why things are done, and it seems a little bit strange. I think some Crusaders fans were starting to have seller's remorse when it came to agreeing to sell their shares, but the deal has collapsed, and we wait to see about where the ownership of that club's going to move.
Is the Adelphi still there, Kieran? I'm sure it's much improved now, isn't it?
The Adelphi is still there. As somebody that works in Liverpool and commutes to Liverpool, I think I was offered £36 a night this week, because I'm in Liverpool all five nights, and I still decided I wasn't prepared to pay that. And in fact, if they paid me £36 a night to stay there, I'd have probably turned that down as well.
I remember the first time, I was quite excited. I did a TV show up there, and I was quite excited when I learned I was staying in the Adelphi. As I looked at a grand old Victorian hotel, and it's like, a hotel with that reputation, you turn up and you book in, and you think, I've been in Wetherspoons that haven't got carpets as sticky as this. It's like there's sound effects. It's like it's a spider with sucker cups in his feet going across all, and incredible. It does seem, Kieran, I mean, with all due respect to the finances of football in Northern Ireland, it does seem with Whiteleaf, Abingdon, and now Crusaders, that Irama's interest in football clubs is more in the ground and the location than in the actual football then.
Well, that was certainly the case with Whiteleaf and Abingdon, because I think they were property deals. Crusaders did appear to be buying the football club itself, but the fact that it failed because of tax reasons does seem rather strange. If you wanted to buy a football club, I thought it would be because you love football, not because of tax consequences.
See, if producer guy paid us more, we could afford to go behind that paywall, Kieran, and get more details. Now, our final news story actually comes via a listener. We always like it when listeners get in touch. We mostly like it when listeners get in touch. We sometimes like it when listeners get in touch. But we did a story recently about travel expenses for FC Isle of Man, and we got some really insight from a completely different country altogether, didn't we?
Yes. So listener Ollie Fugelstadt got in contact with me, and he said Norway is a country with many islands. We normally just associate Norway with fjords and parrots and actual knowledge of the country. But when you look at that map, you call it, there are lots of islands there. And he says, it's an issue as far as Norwegian football is concerned. So, we're aware of what's happening as far as the Isle of Man is concerned. 80% of their budget is going on transport. We've spoken to Jersey Bulls, and we will do our tour. We are still coming to Jersey.
We are
Jersey Bulls. It just involves us organising a diary, and given that myself and Kevin between us can't organise what day of the week it is, it's actually quite a challenge. So Ollie put me in contact with Niels Fiskerjohn, and he was saying that in the third and fourth tiers of Norwegian football, the Norwegian FA effectively offers travel help because they want to encourage football between the islands. So therefore, effectively, the clubs appear to put money, all put the same amount of money into a central pot, and then that's allocated as and when needed to ensure that travel costs are not too much of a burden upon an individual Norwegian club in an individual island where it's not always easy to transport to. So it is indicative that different countries are taking different approaches. I think it is more of a geographically based issue as far as Norway is concerned, and it's good to see that the burden is not on the clubs themselves.
Yeah, I can only apologise to our Norwegian listeners for the fact that we reduced you to fjords and a 1970s Monty Python sketch that gets less funny every time you see it, basically. That there's far more to your country than that. And thank you for the Christmas tree that you send to Trafalgar Square every year. And thank you to everyone who's donated to the pod via our Patreon page. If you'd like to join them and make a small monthly contribution to the pod, that'd be very kind of you. Please go to patreon.com/priceoffootball. Our next live show, as you now know, will take place at Plymouth Argyle's Home Park on Tuesday the 13th of December. Some tickets are now available from Plymouth Argyle's website. And remember, if you have a question you'd like answered on the show, email us at questions@priceoffootball.com. And if it's a specific question about the law and football, then put Ask Nick in brackets. Or those of you who have been waiting 2 years to get a question, ask any question and see if you get slipped in by just putting Ask Nick. See how much attention producer guys paying. In the meantime, I shall hand you over to Mr. Kieran Maguire for his customary farewell.
Thanks, as always. And of course, I'd just like to reiterate the special thanks for those of you that got in contact with regard to my son. He's got Asperger's. It's no fun for him. And the sympathy and the kind words were genuinely touching. Patreon is one way of supporting the show. The other way is to give us a review. It's to go onto your app, and if you can give us 5 stars, that's absolutely fantastic. Only if you think we deserve it, of course. And by all accounts, according to producer guy, the way that the algorithm works is it focuses on the stars and not on the comments. And we've got a long list of questions which are unanswered. We've also got a long list of celebrities that we would like to see host the show. But apparently the next hosts of the show are going to be Holly Willoughby and Philip Schofield. So I don't know where they've come from, but these things happen, I guess.
Well, I don't know how they're going to manage that, Kieran, because there's a huge queue of celebrities snaking down my road waiting to host this pod. I can't imagine any way in which Holly Willoughby and Philip Schofield would find themselves at the head of that queue. Imagine the outcry if that was to happen. Imagine Dwayne The Rock Johnson, who's definitely on the list, getting really cross that suddenly Holly Willoughby and Philip Schofield come in to take our place. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
The Price of Football. Price of Football.